Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is the editor of Progressive Alaska blog and is very familiar with a number of aspects of the record of the present governor of Alaska, who was John McCain's unexpected pick to run with him as vice president. His name is Phil Munger. Phil, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
I must say, this business so much in the news right now about the $700 million bailout raises serious questions, I think, about, say, this particular candidate's qualifications to deal with economic issues. In fact, her running mate has admitted many times in the past that he's unknowledgeable about economics and that he is at heart a deregulator. As recently as a week or so ago, he was saying that the fundamentals of the economy are sound. All of which are very disturbing in the context of what's going on here. And in the Newsweek of this week, which just arrived in my mailbox today, there's a nice article about Palin's pipeline to nowhere. Well, it all depends whether this could even be built upon negotiation with Indian tribes in Canada, where nothing has even been initiated there. It seems to me she may have placed $500 million of state tax money in jeopardy here.
Well, we haven't turned it over to him yet. I mean, basically the plan that we're looking at possibly coming out of this AGIA process is quite similar to the plan that had been put forward by Frank Murkowski 5 years ago and didn't fly then. She's been more successful in pushing it through and in making a claim that this is substantially different from something that it's not than what we'd had before.
But in fact, you're suggesting it's really not.
No, I think if we could get the pipeline to end with an LNG terminal inside of the state with as much state control and as much state citizen control as possible, that would be the best possible outcome for Alaskans. There were three competing sets of ideas. One was the one called AGIA that hooks up with TransCanada. Another one was one that's very nebulous called Denali from the major Alaska oil producers that own most of the oil or most of the rights to the oil here. And then the third one was a pipeline that would end the all Alaska gas line concept that had been put forward for a number of years by ex-Governor Wally Hickel. And so hers is the one furthest along, but with all this stuff up in the air, our state was already the most influx political environment in the United States before Palin's nomination. And this has just thrown it into complete chaos.
Well, the occasion for that just being because of, say, Senator Stevens' political scandals?
Well, he's just one of many who have been tied into this so-called Corrupt Bastards Club. And a number of them in prison already, a couple more trials scheduled, and a couple of people awaiting sentencing, depending on how much they talk, and among other things, in Ted Stevens' trial. And I'm predicting as many 40 people, almost all of them Republicans, will eventually go to trial.
The Corrupt Bastards Club, is that the name of it?
That's what they call themselves. They even made hats and they'd pass them out at the petroleum club at their meetings where they'd figure out ways to rip us off.
Isn't this the height of arrogance, Phil? I mean, really, truly, give us a break, right?
I think the height of arrogance is handing the American people a note that says, hand over $700 billion in a brown bag or I'll blow the economy's brains out.
This is absolutely completely unconscionable. And the way they're rushing it, you know, just as they did over the Patriot Act and over going to war. I mean, I think the pattern now is sufficiently familiar that, for example, listening to Air America today, one host after another was making the same kinds of points about it and rejecting it very forcefully. I mean, from Stephanie Miller to Ed,
Schultz?
Yeah, Schultz, right, exactly, to Tom Hartman, who I thought was being particularly thoughtful about it. Ed's a lot of bluster, though. I think his heart's in the right place. Tom was being very analytical about it, making a lot of points, I thought, that scored heavily.
I haven't had a chance to listen to a whole lot of it. I've got the heaviest work schedule at the University of Alaska Anchorage that I've had in years, and trying to keep up with all this stuff with Sarah hosting several reporters from outside and writing music to a Shakespeare play. So,
is your area theater or journalism or English or related areas?
I teach music in college. I'm known as Alaska's most notorious composer. I'm not renewing those credentials with the music to the Shakespeare play, but if you just Google Philip Munger, Alaska composer, you can see a lot of articles about my past in order.
Okay, good. Are you originally an Alaskan yourself?
I was raised in the Seattle area and came up here in 1973 to escape from music and radio and the urban environment. And basically, the only one I succeeded in escaping from was the urban environment. And when I lived on Prince William Sound for 10 years, and then when we decided we wanted to start a family, we moved to the Wasilla area in 1983.
Oh, really? So your timing was extremely good to be in close proximity to this particular person.
Well, that wasn't part of the plan.
I do recognize that. My son actually is a playwright and a film critic and a director and so forth, lives in Seattle, so it's a special place to me, too.
But I've been fortunate. I've been able to do work in a lot of other areas in Alaska. I worked in various aspects of public safety for 13 years and was a commercial fisher for about that long, too.
Uh-huh. Well, Phil, it seems to me there have been a lot of little scandals involving this woman, Sarah Palin, including, for example, that she was paying herself a per diem while she was living at home and not in the governor's mansion, which certainly has looked highly improper to a rather large segment of the American political community, even if it wasn't, strictly speaking, illegal.
Improper, yes. Illegal, no. But the most amazing thing to me is, I've been a long time observer of Sarah. I've known her for 18 years. But my main interest along the way was her involvement in trying to get or to help people get elected to our local school board. And I was on a couple of parents committees that were involved with curriculum issues. And I was aware back as early as 1996 or 95 that she was pushing the campaigns of a number of fundamentalists and evangelicals who wanted to be on the school board that wanted to teach creationism in the science classroom. And she still feels that, although she's her views on this have evolved, so to say.
Well, that's a topic of great interest to me. My most recent book is entitled Render Unto Darwin and includes a critique of classic creationism, creation science, intelligent design, and all that from the point of view of the philosophy of science, which is my professional background.
And even as late as the campaign debates in September, October of 2006, she seemed to be totally unaware of how important the Dover Area School Board case was. And apparently was in the process of preparing to get people put into our state school system at the time she was put in for vice president, that would have pushed intelligent design in class science classrooms in Alaska. And so I was about to start focusing on her again when this happened.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Phil Munger. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right.
Lester, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Phil Munger, is a faculty member at the University of Alaska, and he's the editor of Progressive Alaska blog, and he's very familiar with Governor Sarah Palin, who was selected by John McCain to be his running mate. My inference, Phil, would be that Sarah Palin would be oblivious of the Establishment Clause, for example, in the Constitution against the establishment of government-sponsored religion, which it has long since decided, as long ago as 1987, was violated by teaching creation science, where the move to intelligent design is an effort to place a kind of scientific disguise or semblance upon what is basically a religious position about the origin of life and evolution.
Well, a number of the reporters I've been talking to, because that's my background, is a number of conversations I've had with Governor Palin or Mayor Palin or City Councilperson Palin over the years on this, have been reporters who are interested in this. Michelle Goldberg, who's written extensively about these issues in the past, spent some time with me, and I helped her get in contact with people in the local area who can speak even more vividly about this than I. And also Dave Nywert from the Pacific Northwest, one of our top experts on the backdrop of militias and millennialist thinkings in the Pacific Northwest and also in Alaska now, plans on coming up here soon.
Good.
And right now, Max Blumenthal, I can't talk much about what he's working on because he wants to keep it sort of sub rosa, is investigating deeply the tie-ins in the area where Sarah lives between these militias, between people who believe in dominionism,
yeah,
and who basically want to start burning witches again if they get her.
It's pretty bizarre. I quite agree.
You know, what's most interesting to me, Jim, is I've known this woman for years. Her son and my son are the same age. They went to rival high schools. They share some of the same friends. And how much of this can go on without you really paying that much attention to it if it doesn't directly affect you?
Yes.
And it's sort of scary. And I'm glad these people are up. In a way, I'm glad she's been nominated because I don't think that her team is going to win. I think she's starting to drag it down. You can see,
yes,
her positives were like 17 points above her negatives just 2 weeks ago, and now her negatives are 9 points above her positives. That's unprecedented.
And that's even with minimal exposure, Phil, because they've been trying to keep her under wraps. But I think the fact that they're finding that necessary. I mean, for example, she went to the UN today to meet the leaders of a number of Eastern European nations, and they wanted to have a team of photographers there for a photo op, but they wouldn't allow the reporters to come in to ask her questions, so they withdrew the photographers, so they didn't even get their photo op.
I just sort of caught up on that in the 7 minutes between when I finished helping some students after my class and I came on here, and I was astounded. Even Fox News is upset.
I'll tell you, I think that the veneer, the glamour, you know, she makes this great initial appearance because she looks so good and because she speaks with great confidence and because she has a nice, clear-cutting way with language. I think that's now starting to wear thin. And Stephanie Miller,
you know,
for example, plays her. Hi, guys and gals, over and over. It just gets grating. You don't want to even hear her voice.
Right. Clear-cutting implies a buzzsaw, I think, and that's what she's getting. I've been listening to that voice for 18 years, and it's just now started to really get to me, having to listen to it. But the most amazing thing that's happened in Alaska this last week, Jim, is that this group, the O'Callaghan crew, this is like a former U.S. prosecutor that was in charge of counterterrorism in New York City and sort of has a lot of affiliations to the Karl Rove aspects of the Bush administration. It came up here, and basically he's now the de facto attorney general of Alaska. Our attorney general, who's a longtime friend of mine, been chased out of the state, and he's running our state's legal affairs along with his team.
So this former terrorist attorney from the State Department, from the Justice Department, yeah.
Yeah, and just watching these press conferences, it's just amazing. And Alaskans, even conservative Alaskans, are rebelling. All but one of the right-wing radio talk shows in Anchorage is starting to complain about this. So, and then this 80% approval area, these people are just, I mean, you could pick up a weirder scenario for them to screw up their base here.
Yes. Well, it's because they don't understand that Alaska is so small in terms of population. You only got about 600,000 people, and almost everybody knows everybody. Certainly, almost everybody who's politically active or cares about these things knows everybody else. And for them to come in and start elbowing, I mean, everybody notices.
That's right. And you know, some of our aspects of our independent thinking are overplayed, especially here in Alaska itself. But in reality, we are fairly independent thinkers, even if we're low information independent thinkers.
Yeah.
And once the idea comes across that somebody from outside has come in and tried to take over our attitudes and our apparatuses of our government, no matter how inefficient it is, that people are going to get upset. So I think I was expecting, frankly, that this candidate would bring this campaign down in flames earlier. But I think it's inevitable that it will, especially with the Ted Stevens trial playing out at the same time. I'm having a contest at Progressive Alaska right now, asking people to send in photographs of Ted Stevens and Sarah together.
Losing our connection a little bit, Phil. I think the Troopergate thing, her reversal about it, when initially she said, of course, she was open to investigation, when it was also bipartisan. I think there were, in fact, more Republicans on the committee that initiated this investigation than there were Democrats. And the reversal about responding to subpoenas has created an extremely bad impression.
Yeah, it was 8-4. How's the connection now?
Better. Yeah, good. It's fine, Phil.
Okay.
Yeah, 8-4, but I mean, you know, when they're now trying to shut it down, we've seen this. We've seen this stonewalling, you know, when we were trying to figure out who exposed Valerie Plame, for example, who was, you know, actually responsible for a covert operation trying to contain the proliferation of nuclear weapons, especially in the Middle East, which I believe was the most important undercover operation in our entire intelligence arsenal, and they're willing to out her for petty political purposes out of a sense of retaliation against Joe Wilson because he's exposed the shoddy forgeries that were at the basis of the lie that Saddam was trying to obtain yellow cake from Niger. I mean, these are really people of such low caliber, low quality, who have no principles. I mean, it's junior high school level operation.
Yes, it is. And I've always been of the school of thought, Valerie Plame, that they were getting a twofer. They were getting Valerie Plame. Not only they were getting people who would think that Joe Wilson.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Living is easy with eyes closed.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. Today, my special guest, Phil Munger, is a member of the faculty at the University of Alaska and the editor of the Progressive Alaska blog and a very knowledgeable fellow when it comes to Alaska politics and Sarah Palin. Phil, this is what you might call a target-rich environment. I remember right after 9/11 when Rumsfeld was issuing instructions to prepare for an invasion of Iraq, and some of his associates said, well, why aren't we going into Afghanistan, since that appeared to have some relationship to 9/11, whereas Iraq did not. And Rumsfeld said, well, there really weren't a lot of targets in Afghanistan, but there were a great many in Iraq.
Well, there are even more in Saudi Arabia.
And even more in Saudi Arabia. 15 of the 19 alleged hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. So, you know, the politics of all of this, of course. But we don't need to go there.
Oil.
But I've done so much work on 9/11 to know this was a put-up job, you know, that the administration was deeply involved in this thing. But when we come back
when
we come back to Sarah, I might mention, by the way, we're getting reports now that the Democrats haven't been bamboozled, and they have withstood the full court press, and they've rejected the $700 billion blank check approach. So I think there's going to be some time devoted to working out whatever might be done. Tom Hartman was observing, among other things, that if you say lent $175,000 to the million or so who are in trouble with their mortgages, that they could, you know, renegotiate their mortgages on much better terms, and this would be from the ground up a way of relieving the credit congestion that's supposed to be precipitating all of this. But the idea that, you know, this guy could come in and ask for this blank check and they have no oversight whatsoever, and all of his decisions not even be subject to review by any court, is so outrageous. So I think they just grossly overplayed their hand here.
It's from the department of you can't make this stuff up.
It's true, Phil. It's absolutely true. Would you agree with my surmise that Sarah wouldn't have a clue when it comes to issues like this? I mean, she would just be absolutely dumbfounded if she were asked to address these issues.
Well, she's been found dumb before, and I'd like to say that, you know, when I heard that she'd been nominated, or her name had been put forward by John McCain on the morning of September 29th, a day that'll live in infamy in Alaska.
Yeah.
But I had gotten some calls from some shows, including Tom Hartman's show, to come on, but, you know, outside, and I, by the time I got in, they'd found other people, but I read through it, and I, my emails, and sure enough, they actually did this. And some people have speculated that she was a dark horse, an outside shot, and those of us who've known her for a long time said, well, not if they bet her. And
yeah. Not if they bet her, meaning she would be excluded because what would be turned up?
Well, so much stuff that's being turned up now.
Yeah.
I mean, she initially was voted as an awesome mom. And her family is fairly dysfunctional. And by the way, my wife and kids have asked that I not get into the family in detail.
Yeah.
But I have
already formed some opinions about that of my own, so continue. And of course, the National Enquirer is getting into this, which exposed the John Edwards affair years before it was acknowledged publicly by him.
Yeah, but, I mean, every aspect of what they pushed her as, for instance, as somebody who had rooted out corruption, there are two people who were removed from jobs that they had back in the Murkowski, the Frank Murkowski gubernatorial administration when she was the chair of the Alaska Oil and Gas Pipeline Commission. One was Randy Rudrick, who was a board member. She accused him of doing Republican Party business on the board's time and had him removed. But he still retains his chairmanship of the Republican Party, and they are, Andy Rudrick and Sarah Palin are working very closely together on this campaign. So, I mean, she didn't root him out of anything other than the salary.
Yeah.
And it was actually payback for him not helping her in her run in 2002 for the lieutenant governor race. So
yeah.
That was all about payback. That wasn't about corruption.
Yeah.
And then the other person, Greg Rankis, who was the attorney general at the time, she tried to take credit for his removal, but really it was Eric Croft, who was in the House, who signed the initial complaint against her and against him, and Sarah sort of piggybacked that and took the credit for it. Well, Eric, you know, it moved on to other things. And so that's one thing. She said that you can't name a single person that she has removed for corruption. The FBI got on the corrupt bastard, Sarah Palin. She said that she got she's cut taxes. She has never cut a tax. She cut property taxes, but only because of a program her predecessor and mayor of Wasilla, John Stein, had put into place. And it was just finally come on the line when she became mayor.
And, of course, Alaska is anomalous from the point of view of taxes, since you have no income tax, and every resident gets a $2,000 royalty check from the oil companies, and this year a $1,200 bonus because the price of oil has been so high.
Yeah, and that should have been dealt with more intelligently. Basically, that was a bribe. And with that amount of money, we could have invested on renewable energy projects in a lot of parts of the state where they really need it, where their economy is hurting, and that money's going to just be pissed through really fast in all those areas.
Yeah.
And we need to be creating renewable
infrastructure in a lot of our coastal communities, fishing communities, whether they're native or partially native or non-native, they're all on the brink. You can't keep a cold storage plant going with the price of fuel like it is here.
Yeah. Instead of buying more snowmobiles and creating more pollution and making the environment worse off.
Yeah. And then the Bridge to Nowhere thing, that's come out pretty well in the press. She was for it before she was against it. The basic reality was, by the time she became governor, that money had been declared off limits by the U.S. Congress for a bridge to anywhere.
Yes.
But she still continued to build the road to it, and they just finished building the road to the Bridge to Nowhere.
Yeah.
At a cost of $35 million, and the mayor of Ketchikan says, well, it's going to make a really nice place to have our 5K races. For $35 million.
Yes.
And the more people look into her record, she just looks like a person whose career has been strewn with the bodies of anybody who ever stood against her, whether it was rational or not.
Well, this is where I believe the phrase, you know, Sarah Barracuda originated. It's got to do with her being rather vicious and turning on friends. You know, she'll stab anyone in the back. It's got nothing to do with her being an aggressive point guard. I think that's all complete Republican nonsense.
Yeah, she has more similarity to the lead person in the movie Heathers than she does with Tina Fey.
I don't know the movie, but
about a high school girl that turns on all her friends just to advance herself. It's a classic. And go ahead.
Let me just try this out on you. You know, she hasn't tried to get a pandas and people into the curriculum, I'm presuming, but maybe she has. If I, as a philosopher, pointed out to her the arguments for intelligent design are flawed, for example, that Michael Behe's Darwin's black box argument that there are forms of complexity that can't be explained by evolution, using, you know, as an artificial example, a mousetrap, where he claims that if, you know, one part were missing from the mousetrap, it would be dysfunctional, ignores that, in fact, it would simply have different functions. It might serve as a doorstop, for example, rather than as a mousetrap. So that, you know, the arguments that have been given in support of intelligent design really just don't cut it.
And a person that doesn't have 20 seconds to spend with honest questions and answers with the press isn't the person to even be being able to try and espouse the wise watchmaker idea that underlies some of this intelligence design BS.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of the Panda Stump, by the way. That website where those guys go around and check out all the creators.
Yeah, stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Phil Munger. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
So you're a host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Phil Munger, is on the faculty at the University of Alaska. He's the editor of the Progressive Alaska blog, and he has lived in this small town where the Republican vice president nominee was mayor. Wasilla, and I gotta say, Phil, a number of the stories I learn about Wasilla give me the creeps. I mean, this thing about billing victims for rape kits is simply outrageous.
It sure was, and the more we find out about it, the less she can try and squiggle out from underneath her responsibility in the matter.
You know, I was kind of stunned when I had former Governor Mike Gravel, Senator Mike Gravel, on the show last week, and he was saying some favorable things about Sarah, about being, you know, a genuine person, but it seems to me that she's not, that she's completely disingenuous, almost totally artificial. I mean, you could go through case after case after case, it seems to me, where she is nothing but a superficial impression. You know, she's kind of a dynamic ball of fire, but the substance is just not there.
I'm having to relearn a lot of things about Sarah that I forgot over the years. My wife has been kidding me about this. She is active in women's issues, and she hasn't forgotten nearly as much as me. We never thought that she'd get to this point where she'd be potentially as dangerous for the country and the world as John McCain's running mate.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely frightening on that level. But as far as, you know, Wasilla being a creepy place, it was a great place to raise kids.
The things I was worrying about her in relation to Wasilla gave me the creeps, not Wasilla itself, but you know, like the rape kit thing. And then, you know, building the sports facility without actually having legally obtained the property before you began building. I mean, that's an extremely stupid way to conduct the business of a community.
And that's the way it was looked at the time by a lot of people, including some of Sarah's supporters, and it's never really worked out that well. But it could have worked out worse, is their side of the argument. but seriously, I'm going to have to cut off after this segment. I just got an email. We've got an emergency organizing meeting having to do with this de facto attorney general and his ability to practice law in the state of Alaska. I've been asked to attend. So, yeah, there's maybe more breaking stuff on that later today.
Well, that's simply sensational. Even the PTA thing troubles me. My impression, I mean, I've got mixed reports as to whether her kids have done any homeschooling or private schools or religious schools. Can you fill me in on that, Phil?
Well, they tried them all. You know, back when they just had a couple of kids, the two eldest, they tried homeschooling, and it just didn't work with Todd's work schedule of a couple weeks on, a couple weeks off on the slope. And the North Slope, where he works, and her, I guess, activism between her job and going around to all these organizing meetings of the Republican, the fundamentalist evangelical underground. And, it's like the kids weren't, if you're going to homeschool your kids, you can do it. And I've worked with a lot of kids who have been superbly homeschooled, but it wasn't working. And then they put them in the Christian schools in the Valley, and they're awful. I mean, there are a couple of them that have gotten better, but back then they were uniformly awful.
It seems to me homeschooling is so demanding that, you know, I would never consider it myself. I have a friend who homeschooled his kids. He's got both a PhD in physics and an MD, and he's board certified in radiation oncology, and one of the most superior human beings I've ever known. Now, he was great, very successful with his kids homeschooling, but my God. I mean, what do most parents know about history or mathematics or biology or whatnot? They're just not competent as I see it.
Well, there's a big group of homeschoolers up in the Matanuska Valley where I live, and it varies far, far more than it varies from good school to bad school. And you know, sometimes when you see a bunch of kids at the roller skate park smoking and sneaking drinks in the middle of the day, we refer to them as homeschoolers.
But at any rate, the PTA credential is really quite flimsy, is it not? I mean,
yeah, I don't recall. None of my friends can recall her ever being an officer in the PTA, which would be what I would think to be your minimal requirement to PTA mom.
Yeah, and being a mayor, it seems to have been kind of a fouled up situation, the sports complex, and gee, what. She sought to fire a librarian, though that maybe she did, and then the librarian was reinstated, and she actually did fire the police chief?
She fired a police chief, one of the best. I worked in public safety for 13 years, and Earl Stambaugh was one of the finest police officers I've ever worked with on any sort of task force or team or study group and or been to a seminar with. And the same holds true for Mr. Monaghan, who she fired as the director of public safety. He was an outstanding public safety officer, and now they're trying to trash his legacy 24/7.
Firing him ostensibly, and this is not, of course, the real reason, because he was going to Washington to obtain money so they could increase teaching or coping with sexual abuse, rapes, and incest, where Alaska has the highest rate of any state in the nation.
We do, and among our native peoples, both in the urban areas like Anchorage or Fairbanks, and out in the bush, it's a third world dictator might even blanch at the statistics we have here. And what Mr. Monaghan was involved in was a long-term effort with some people from the Justice Department. He's one of the few people at that level in public safety, you know, that I've met who is familiar with the documents from the United Nations, from Amnesty International, from the U.S. Justice Department on how to fix this problem. The problems of sexual abuse in the United States, and especially in Alaska, aren't getting better. And in Alaska, they're actually getting worse. And what a lot of these problems stem from are lack of cooperation and coordination between different jurisdictions.
Well, you know what this suggests to me, Phil, is that the guy she fired would have made a better qualified running mate for John McCain than the one he picked.
Absolutely. And you know, she has no qualifications whatsoever. When I told my wife on September 29th I didn't tell her. I said, guess who John picked for his running mate? And she went down the list, and I said, think of some more. And she gone through probably a dozen and a half names, and she said, well, who? And I said, Sarah. And she said, no.
No, you know, you got
to
be part of my
team. She was sure I was kidding her. She had to go upstairs and turn the television
He's
on.
He's going for the TNA vote.
And then she, oh, my God.
I got a friend who's actually pretty perceptive who's saying subliminally between Sarah Palin and John McCain, the theme of the Republican campaign is sex and violence.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's about as far as those guys can go. Bomb, 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 Iran, drill, baby,
well, the
drill.
Problem is McCain is no longer competent, you know, if he ever was. I mean, there's deterioration in the last 8 years. They, in 1999, they released 1,500 pages of his health records, including mental health. This time, and they let everyone look at it as long as they wanted. This time, they restricted it to a small group for a couple hours, wouldn't let notes or copies be made, and there was practically nothing there about his mental health.
Right. Or anything having to do with, for instance, Alzheimer's all on.
I know. Even Ron Reagan was saying the other night on Air America that he's very troubled that McCain often doesn't know what he's talking about. He seems to be incoherent, and he thinks there's a serious question about his mental state. And I think that's absolutely correct.
No, I think the only thing that can save this campaign at this point would be for her son to get hurt in Iraq.
Yeah, and the problem. Oh, I see. Well, we don't want to give him any ideas, right? Well, I'll just tell you, the idea that she should be so close to, if they were to be elected by some fluke, and I think this economic catastrophe has just run a Mack truck through their campaign slogans, he is the deregulator and all that, but for her to be placed so close to the presidency is just a frightening prospect.
Yeah, well, I'm looking, as I might have started mentioning earlier, Joe, I'm looking for photographs. I'm having a contest at Progressive Alaska of people who can submit photographs of Ted and Sarah together, and the prize for this, the winner gets a free halibut charter in Homer, Alaska.
How about finding one where she's pregnant with this little kid who I believe actually is Bristol's offspring?
I won't touch that one with a 10-foot pole.
Hey, Phil, I want to thank you for coming on. I'm really grateful. I hope we can do it again. I like having you on.
I hope next time we talk, we'll have some real good news.
Terrific. Yeah, me too. Excellent. Good luck with this business with the interloper in the Attorney General's office.
Keep your eyes on the internet, okay?
Will do. Thank you so much. My special guest today, Phil Munger, who's a member of the faculty of the University of Alaska and who's runs the editor of the Progressive Alaska blog, and a very knowledgeable guy, very articulate, good guy. Stand by. Professor, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
I know it's turning. Come
Jim Fester, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kev and Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays. And I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Phil Munger, who's on the faculty at the University of Alaska and who is the editor of the Progressive Alaska blog, was called away from the show for the second hour because they're investigating whether or not this high-powered anti-terrorism attorney that was shipped up to Alaska by the McCain administration, by the McCain campaign, to ward off the investigation of Troopergate is even entitled to practice law in Alaska. Apparently, he's become the acting or de facto attorney general, replacing a Palin pick for that office, a guy who had initially been cooperative with the investigation into Troopergate, but who subsequently instructed the dozen or so state employees who had been issued subpoenas not to respond to them, which I'm quite confident is an illegal act. And also, of course, took no umbrage when Sarah Palin's own husband, Todd, refused to respond to his subpoena. And it may sound odd that Todd would be issued a subpoena in the first place until you read more about him and you find that he is really Sarah Palin's troubleshooter, that he is her foremost defender, goes to state meetings of state officials, injects his opinion in matters of policy and all that, which means that it's all the more appropriate that he should be subjected to subpoena. As I understand it, and of course, it's well known that the inquiry here was initially nonpartisan, where you had a committee of 8 Republicans and 4 Democrats who issued these subpoenas, for example, and launched the investigation, but that their primary investigator already had the opportunity to obtain statements from each of those who were being subpoenaed, so that he actually has access to their testimony, even though it's now in the form of some, you know, written statements as opposed to personal examination. And there's reason to believe what we have been hearing from Alaska from the legislature is that they're going to be able to complete this in a timely fashion, and we're going to have it available to us a couple weeks before the election, which is a good thing. What you'll find is that Sarah Palin has displayed a history of abusing her position, such as by firing the police chief in Wasilla, having the librarian fired, though she was eventually reinstated, and now firing this public safety director who, as Phil was observing, you know, is more highly qualified to be a vice presidential candidate than is Sarah Palin herself. So I think it's going to turn out that she was a flash in the pan, that it's a fascinating case because she looks so glamorous. She's certainly an attractive woman. She's a well-spoken woman. But she seems to have a number of personal traits that are highly undesirable. These are just the kind of thing that we have had a bellyful of with the Bush-Cheney administration, abusing the position for the sake of personal vendettas and all that. Sarah Palin fits very comfortably into the Bush-Cheney mold, such that there was a very witty piece about her being, vice president, or qualifications for vice president, that I read that was a satire about how what she would do in the office. And, of course, as I had long suspected, this name, her name Barracuda, had nothing to do with her playing basketball, but rather that she's a vicious person who will use and abuse even her friends. And I think this is absolutely consistent with this woman's character. Now, I'm going to spend the rest of the show talking about the Sarah Palin, who appears to me to be completely unqualified for her position, and this bailout proposal from the Bush administration, which is a travesty. So that if anyone would like to call in to talk about either of these topics, the number here is 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. You're welcome to call in. Plenty of chances for us to talk today. Especially about these two primary topics, but if there's something else you'd like to address, you're welcome to bring it up. just to review the Bush plan, which the Democrats now have basically rejected. So there's a present stalemate in the Congress over this, which is very good because the Democrats have not always shown the kind of spine they need to have shown. Where John McCain, by the way, continues his litany of lies. I mean, this man can says nothing on the campaign trail that is true, so far as I can determine. Was blaming the Democrats, you know, for these financial problems because they had control of Congress for the last 2 years, as though their control of Congress were not completely tenuous. And they even had a member of Congress who did, suffered a stroke and couldn't even be present. Where they couldn't override any vetoes by Bush. So that here's McCain just playing games. Not only that, but it seems to me that the origins of these problems we're confronting today were early in the Bush administration, in fact, almost immediately, where he committed the Enron practice of telescoping profits, where Enron, for those of who are unaware of this technique of accounting, treated, you know, distant profits as though they were already available on the book. So if you had a contract that at the end of the year was going to bring you $100,000 in profit, say, you can go ahead and write that $100,000 down now and treat as though you already had it. This is the Enron bookkeeping technique that George Bush used by telescoping the projected surpluses that Bill Clinton had set the nation on a trajectory. We were going to wind up with $3 trillion in surpluses at some point in the not too awfully distant future. But Bush started talking about it so that we're money already in hand. And he talked about how, well, we could give $1 trillion in tax cuts to the wealthy, right, and still have $1 trillion for Social Security, and then have $1 trillion for whatever we want. Except, of course, when he cut those taxes, the income base that was going to generate those $3 trillion was vitiated, and you know, never got around to doing anything but try to privatize Social Security. And if we privatized Social Security, we'd all be in the tank right now. I mean, I've had the benefit of Social Security since June of 2006, actually, when I retired at 65 and a half. It just happened to be I'd be 65 and a half in June of 2006. And while, you know, I had to have other sources of financial support, that through principally through the accumulation of a retirement account through TIAA CREF, which is the most widely used retirement corporation for faculty in the country, putting that together with the Social Security in such a retirement package as I was given enabled me to retire and to move down near Madison. To be near my daughter and son-in-law who wanted to start a family and wanted me and Jan to be here to help raise her kids. That touched me greatly because so many I know, their kids really don't want to have a lot to do with their parents, and it sounds as though that may be even true of Sarah Palin's family. Phil didn't confirm it, but I take it there are stories here to be told about Bristol that are yet to be coming clear. So I must say the tabloids are starting to dig into this as one of their great strengths when it comes to these areas of rumor and speculation getting beneath the surface. Stand by, Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. shine of a dark black night.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett. Well, you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today, Philip Munger, was called away to a meeting concerning whether or not this high-powered attorney sent by the from the Bush Justice Department, who is normally an anti-terrorism expert, who came up there to suppress the investigation at Troopergate, is or is not entitled to practice law in Alaska, because he seems to have become the de facto attorney general of Alaska, and it's upsetting a lot of Alaskans. It's a very small, tight-knit community. There are only about 600,000 population in Alaska. And even the right-wingers, according to Phil, are getting extremely upset about this. He knows the right-wing radio hosts even are very upset. This guy coming into Alaska to start upsetting the apple cart. And what had been a nonpartisan investigation with a committee with 8 Republicans and 4 Democrats who issued these subpoenas, where even Sarah Palin feigned to be in favor of this, you know, all for transparency, the kind of thing that John McCain feigns today, you know, there should be transparency about these financial arrangements for this bailout. But McCain, if he won't support transparency for his own vice presidential pick when it comes to something as blatant as her potential abuse of power in her position as governor by firing the director of public safety because he would not in turn fire a trooper who'd been in a messy divorce with her sister, where there were some 24 contacts from close friends or allies of the governor, is seeking to get the trooper fired. I mean, what will McCain stand up for? That's relatively trivial compared now to this bailout business, but McCain is, it seems to me to be far, far beyond the man he used to be that won the admiration of so many reporters on his then, perhaps appropriately named Straight Talk Express, which has long since derailed. The other point I was making, however, about the origin of these problems this bailout is purporting to solve, which I think without any doubt it could not possibly do, include the fact that Bush was also touting, think about it, the ownership society. You've probably forgotten the phrase. George Bush, when he came to office, not only cut the taxes for the rich, and there went a trillion, but also started talking about, trillion in the mythical $3 trillion that we were going to eventually acquire. But of course, we didn't actually have that money on hand. So when he cut a trillion, he was actually deeply, deeply, in tax cuts, he was actually deeply, deeply cutting into the potential sources of revenue that would have accumulated that surplus Clinton had projected. So now he was talking about the ownership society, and I have no doubt that that is the ultimate root of all of this business about mortgages, people who really couldn't afford loans being encouraged to buy them, and the real estate bubble that would grow and grow and grow and finally burst here, and only in about the last 6 months or year. So I mean, we've really been going through something that it seems to me is 100%. The responsibility of George W. Bush, especially when he had such complete control of the Congress, particularly after the death of Senator Paul Wellstone in 2002. Well, the Republicans took control of the Senate, and now, of course, they've been working nonstop to try to stack the courts. This is known as the Project among those in the know, where they even had Michael Mukasey come in for a talk with the power brokers who wanted to know, number one, that he wasn't going to prosecute anyone in the Bush administration for violating the law, implied no matter how serious the offense might be, and number two, that he wasn't going to interfere with the project, which is stacking the Justice Department and the courts with a lot of right-wing zealots. And I'm afraid that's still going on apace. I mean, what we have here now, it seems to me also in terms of the timing, although that wasn't completely under the control of the administration, when the market starts to fall and fall and fall and fall, is another massive distraction from the campaign, except, of course, it happens to be one that is very beneficial, I believe, to the Democratic ticket and very damaging to the Republican. I mean, John McCain, on innumerable occasions, and you could have, a dozen different commercials, political commercials made on this theme, repeated how he really doesn't know much about economics and how he is at heart a deregulator. He says that's basically what he is. He's a deregulator. So he wants to take away all those safeguards and regulations that were built up, particularly since the Great Depression, in order to ensure that something like this wouldn't happen again. And it's happening again because of deregulation. And, of course, greed, which appears to be boundless among Republicans. It seems as though no matter how rich, they're not rich enough. A friend of mine used to joke that the Republicans are the party that think that the poor have too much money and the rich have too little. And I used to think that was merely a joke, but I tell you, it's much closer to the heart of the matter. And after all this, after the 8 years of Bush and Cheney and their lawlessness and their reckless disregard for the Constitution and their engagement in wars and violation of international law, the U.N. Charter, and even the U.S. Constitution, where Sarah Palin doesn't even know that the Bush Doctrine is the claim that the United States is entitled to be an aggressor nation if it's in the nation's interest, which might therefore be equally well known as the Hirohito Doctrine, except that the United States was a greater threat to Japan's national security than Iraq was a threat to the United States' national security. So we have all these things going on, and then the lies about weapons of mass destruction and Saddam being involved and in cahoots with al-Qaeda. Even the FBI has admitted it has no hard evidence that connects Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. 15 of those 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. The number from Iraq was zero, so why didn't we invade Saudi Arabia? Instead, we were arranging for special flights to get the bin Laden family out of the United States and back to Saudi Arabia, away from any kind of interrogation or investigation. So, you know, this guy claims to be the security president is such a phony and such a liar and such a fraud. And I suppose, you know, Sarah Palin, on a smaller scale, is also a liar and a phony and a fraud. And therefore, you know, she was a great pick for those who were running the McCain administration, who wanted somebody glamorous, who would distract attention, somebody especially a woman. They were so desperate after the completely sensational, I can't think of a better word for it, unless it's spectacular, Democratic convention, including the magnificent handling of Obama's acceptance speech in the football stadium. I mean, how that convention could have been more flawless is beyond me. It was probably the best organized, the best run convention in modern American political history. And since, you know, the conventions have only really been decided by the voting and by the delegates in the last 50 years or so, it's probably the best convention ever in American political history. They wanted something to distract attention from it. It had to be done Friday morning, lest people let it sink in how wonderfully the Democrats had handled all of this. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest from Alaska, Phil Munger, who's on the faculty at the University of Alaska, and who maintains he's the editor of the Progressive Alaska blog, and who knows a great deal about Sarah Palin. He has even lived in Wasilla. And was making a great, great guest, was called away because they're having a meeting about whether or not the high-powered attorney that the Bush administration provided to try to smother the Troopergate investigation, or at least delay it until after the election, is even entitled to practice law in Alaska. I take it there's some doubt. I'm willing to bet it will turn out he is not. And yet he's been entrusted or made the de facto or acting attorney general to run the state, and everyone's getting pretty upset about that. So I think it's great that he was going to the meeting, and we'll look forward to hearing more. In fact, he implied that there's going to be some blockbuster stuff coming out about Sarah Palin, and the whole thing was done in such a rush. There was no vetting of Sarah Palin at all. Many of those who would have been the obvious people to contact, including, for example, the director of public safety who was dismissed, fired by Palin when he wouldn't fire the trooper, he wasn't questioned. Members of the House, the other legislature, were not questioned. The past governors were not questioned about it. None of this vetting was done. And all you get from them is lies, lies, lies. It was done. It was a rush thing because they wanted to distract attention from the Democratic convention because it was so brilliant. And it was. In fact, Obama's run a completely brilliant campaign from beginning to end, even not taking out the vaunted Clinton machine, which had advantages in money and in name recognition and in political power that vastly exceeded his in the beginning. I mean, the guy has shown himself to be a political strategist on the order of Napoleon. I mean, this guy is a phenomenon. In fact, the more I learn about Barack Obama, the more I admire him, including, for example, when they try to draw these comparisons, I worked as a community organizer and then the Illinois legislature and then in the Senate and the Foreign Relations Committee and all that. He not only has a superb background where he studied political science and international relations at Columbia and where he was then elected to be an editor of the Harvard Law Review and after that the president of the Harvard Law Review. But the guy spent 10 years, actually 12, at the University of Chicago teaching constitutional law. Now, this is the kind of guy we need in the presidency, somebody who understands the Constitution. Bush described the Constitution, according to various aides who said that he made this remark after they pointed out that some of what he was proposing was unconstitutional. It's just a goddamn piece of paper, quoting the President of the United States about the Constitution of the United States, which he had taken an oath to preserve, protect, and defend from all enemies, foreign and domestic. We just didn't expect he was going to be one of them. And I guarantee he's going to pardon himself and everyone in his administration from all crimes, real or imagined, okay? This is a completely unscrupulous human being who has where we really have had a crime syndicate masquerading as an administration. They don't care about the American people. They care about their buddies or cronies or friends. And what's the latest scheme they've come up with, as though they're not running us into debt fast enough? The first $700 billion installment on this bailout plan included the following elements. Give the Treasury Secretary broad authority to buy up to $700 billion in virtually any kind of bad asset, including credit card debt or car loans from any financial institution in the United States or abroad in order to stabilize markets. And by the way, his power is not subject to any kind of review whatsoever. Second judgment, not even by courts. Yeah. Osama from Pakistan. Stand by, I'll get to him. Glad he called. Raise the $10.6 trillion statutory limit on the national debt to $11.3 trillion. Allow the Treasury Secretary to buy, hold, and sell the assets in any way he sees fit. That includes the ability to go outside normal government contracting practices to hire private companies to manage them. Basically, we're just stuffing $700 billion in the pocket of this Henry Peterson guy. So on the cover of Newsweek, which just showed up today, they got his photograph with the heading King Henry. I mean, this is incredible. This is outrageous. Give the government the power to designate financial institutions as financial agents of the government and require them to carry out any reasonable duties that entails. So he's actually going to be able to start putting financial institutions that work for the government. This gets worse and worse. Require the administration to report to congressional budget, tax, rate, and financial services committees within 3 months of using the authority every 6 months. Well, see, that's just a bow in the direction of accountability. It doesn't actually imply any because no one can second guess or correct him. Instruct the Treasury Secretary to consider both providing market stability and protecting taxpayers using the bailout power. Shield the program from judicial review. Program expires 2 years after enactment. I'd point out, $700 billion, remember, a billion is 1,000 times a million. So the population of the United States is about 300 million men, women, and children in total. So we're talking about what's the equivalent of a lump sum tax on every man, woman, and child in the United States equal to about $2,500. Just boom, overnight. I don't know why no one started talking about it, but somebody's going to be paying for it, and the ones who are paying for it are the taxpayers, you and me and everyone else who pays taxes to the United States, which does not include most corporations, by the way. They find ways to evade those taxes, moving their headquarters overseas, moving their business to another country, all these kinds of things. What if the Democrats wanted? And I think it may become, this is maybe even more stalemated than this suggests, closer oversight. Well, considering there wasn't any would be an improvement, including an emergency board to keep an eye on the program with two congressional appointees and a special inspector general appointed by the president. Limit the kind of troubled debt the government can buy to mortgage-related investments. Oh, well, now isn't that appropriate? Require the government get shares in the troubled companies helped by the rescue. I like that, you see. But who's going to manage all this? You know, just suppose we buy up the government buys up mortgages. Who's going to look after the properties when, say, they're uninhabited? Maybe you got a house and the government buys it, you know, and it takes a year before it's sold. Who's looking after the property? Who's tending to it? Who's making sure the pipes don't break in the winter and all that? I mean, we're going to talk about an absurd new form of government, a new layer of government that's going to absorb most of that, you know, $100 billion right off the top, I would say. Ridiculous. Create a means to help prevent foreclosures on the mortgages required as part of the bailout. Well, one thing you could do is just take that money, you know, and give it to them, say, million or so homeowners who are having trouble with their mortgages, lend them $175,000, for example, apiece, and let them negotiate a new mortgage with their companies and gradually pay it back. That would be a far superior system that would have much more beneficial effects than giving all this money, stuffing it in the pocket of Henry Paulson. Place limits on the executive pay packages of the companies that unload their bad assets on the government. Well, there's a novel idea. Many of these, you know, high-powered Wall Street types and financiers and businessmen take over companies, run them into the ground, then walk away with tens of millions of dollars in bonuses to themselves. It's completely disgusting. Limit the program to financial institutions with significant operations in the United States and exclude foreign central banks and companies owned by foreign governments. Expires at the end of 2009. So, let's see, we're only 2008, and they have a shorter life. The bailout plan submitted to Congress seeks vast powers for the Treasury Secretary to purchase troubled assets from financial institutions over the next 2 years, to hire people to manage that portfolio, and to issue regulations to stabilize the mortgage market as the Secretary deems necessary. It can be completely subjective. Rewrites the job descriptions of the Treasury Secretary, not only overseer of the government's tax revenue and fiscal policies domestically and abroad, but becomes a chief executive for the nation's financial system. What a god-awful idea. Stand by, Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey, Jude, don't be afraid. You were made to.
Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today was Phil Munger, who's on the faculty of the University of Alaska and also is the editor of the Progressive Alaska blog. Terrific guy. I was really enjoying our conversation when he was drawn off to a meeting to discuss whether or not this high-powered attorney set up by the Bush and McCain people to stifle Troopergate is even qualified to practice law in the state of Alaska. My guess is going to turn out is going to be that it's going to turn out to be false. I mentioned a couple of new reports from Pakistani lawyers say both recent Marriott attack and 9/11 done by the U.S. 9/11 inside job mean reinforced together with plane hugging continues to give a free pass Well, the source here who wrote this, it's interesting that the important figures in Pakistan are reporting that the Marriott attack appears to be 9/11, which I think makes perfect sense since Pakistan had been resisting American intrusion into Pakistani territory and even using Pakistani military force to oppose it. That calls for an attack like this, a pseudo-attack blamed on Al-Qaeda. So they blow up, have a huge explosion in front of the Marriott and kill a lot of people and then claim it on Al-Qaeda and show how the Pakistan administration is supposed to be out of touch because this is what can happen if you don't fight them the way the Americans are fighting them. And the whole thing is staged and contrived from beginning to end, just like 9/11 was staged and contrived to beginning to end. Here, in that case, it's to manipulate the Pakistani people, only they do not appear to be falling for it. Americans are far more gullible and far less sophisticated. Now, we have an interesting call on the line, since I take it that Osama bin Laden, in all probability, met his demise at the end of 2001, 2002, somewhere in there, and is not among the living. So here, if we have a call from Osama in Pakistan, my bet is going to be it's actually from Rolf in Madison, but we'll find out. Osama, you're on the line. Osama, you're on the line. Matt?
It's very good to listen to you.
Yeah.
I did not do the bombing at the Marriott. I did not do 9/11. And I am alive, but I am Osama number 5.
Osama number 5. Well, you certainly don't sound like the original, who we have seen many times in audios and videos. But tell me more of your take on the current events, Osama, since it's such an unusual opportunity to have you on the line.
First, a little background. Osama's 1, 2, 3 were dead, and Osama number 4 is Fatih bin Laden, and I'm the guy with the Gratian formula beard.
Okay. Right.
So,
tell me more.
So I am here in my cave complex with my burrow, and we have a lot of good things here in cave complex, and you are a big hit. We always listen to you. That's where we get the truth and know what's going on. And I have a small commentary on some of what you've been talking about today.
Please.
With the bailouts.
Be my guest.
I had heard about the $300 billion that they threw at the market last week. And then I heard about the $700 billion. And I said, oh, what's it going to be week after that?
Yeah.
$1.44 trillion?
That's right. This is just a down payment. They'll come back again and again. Once they set the precedent, they'll be coming back forever.
But I was listening to Stephanie Miller, who I also like down in the cave complex, and she said something about $1.8 trillion that they want to throw into market. I don't know where all this money is coming from.
Well, you were listening to Stephanie. Did you hear a call in from Jim in Madison who pointed out that this all traced back to the Ownership Society, this slogan of George W. Bush in his first administration? Because I got that in edgewise, but then when I went to listen on the radio, I was too late to hear it. Did it make it on the air?
Yeah, was that you?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent, excellent. I cannot believe how long you have been exposing the truth and how tired your efforts are. I'm very tired. You know, I'm younger than you probably, and I'm just so tired.
Well, do you suffer from same kidney problems that your predecessors have suffered from, or are you free from a kidney dialysis machine?
Yes, no, I have dialysis machine which my burrow carries from cave to cave, and the burrow is very cute, but he poops a lot. I just really credit you with being such a champion for truth for so long.
Well, I had a lot of practice on an earlier program called Black Op Radio with a fellow named Leno Sanic, who's doing his part for the truth too.
Yes, and I hope that GCN will keep you on there for 2 hours and cut your show or take you off the air, because, you know, you are the only thing that makes it worth listening to those horrible snake oil commercials.
Oh, I tell you, I've even had to complain about an occasional commercial to the owner, Ted Anderson. Some of them have been quite offensive. So think of this as an oasis in the midst of a desert, I suppose, huh?
It sure is for me, Jim. We love you very much, and we hope you keep doing the good work that you're doing. And greetings from Pakistan. I did not do it. I didn't do it.
Thank you, Osama. Thank you for calling, and you're welcome to call again, all right?
Blessings, Jim.
Thanks so much. Well, there you have it, sports fans. From the front in Pakistan, Osama, the fifth Osama, denying he had anything to do with the Marriott bombing, and I have no doubt he had nothing to do with the Marriott bombing, since in my opinion he's long since deceased. But that it looks as though, you know, the Pakistanis aren't as easily taken in as Americans. There is a part of a report here, by the way, I had from another source. According to eyewitness account, steel boxes were carried from the American embassy to the Marriott, taken to the fourth and fifth floor of the hotel without any security check, ostensibly by Marines. They said at the main gate of the hotel, a truck laden with explosives and burning in the rear was seen while the fire was ignited on the fourth and fifth floor of the hotel. In other words, we have completely separate causation. So the fourth and the fifth appears to be brought about by whatever were the contents of these steel boxes, unlike the truck, which, of course, had an enormous explosive in it, dug a huge, huge pit there. But it doesn't look as though this was a suicide attack, but rather one in which the United States is directly involved. And I say, these people just overplay their hand. They're so arrogant. They're so blatant. It's so obvious. I mean, I told my family my opinion that this was a CIA op when it first occurred because the timing was so perfect. In the meanwhile, we have this attempt to give $700 billion to Bush's friends. And by the way, notice what's going on here, a complete transformation of the American economy. Bush and Cheney and all these people, including especially McCain, have advocated the benefits of the free market. Just let the market work and it will do its thing. Now all of us, and the government is the problem. Remember Ronald Reagan said government is the problem. All we need is for government to get out of the way. Now they find themselves in trouble and they want the government to bail them out. Now all of a sudden the government is the solution. Now no longer are free markets really the right solution to every economic problem. Now they're completely betraying their ideology. I think that the fiscal conservative ideology in the United States has been shattered to pieces by this event. And even you have prominent conservatives like George Will and William Kristol who are expressing profound concerns about McCain, the way he's running his campaign, the choice of Sarah Palin, and now this bailout. I'm telling you, my friends, we're in a most interesting time politically. Read all the papers you can, pay attention, listen to as many different sources. Catch Crossfire with Keith Olbermann every night if you can. You'll learn a lot from that show alone. Stand by. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Thank you all for listening.